It's Lance Armstrong week here on OTB.
Are you a complete rookie?
OTB Gold.
Listen to our interviews with the people closest to his story on the OTB Podcast Network.
Are you crazy?
All right, you're very welcome back. If you want to get in touch with us, as ever, the text number is 53106, or you can tweet us here at Off The Ball. We have David Walsh, the chief sports writer of the Sunday Times, on the line. David, good evening to you.
Good evening.
So this has been a sensational week, really, in the history of Team Sky. David Brailsford and Shane Sutton were in front of the select committee during the week, and they kind of talked themselves in and out of they ran rings around each other and talked themselves in and out of trouble at various stages. Now, a couple of days on from it, what's your overriding impression of their performance and also their credibility at this point?
I thought Shane Sutton was really poor. He looked out of his depth, and I just felt sorry, Shane, I can't believe anything you're saying. I mean, I'm sure much of what he said was truthful, but he didn't have credibility. I thought Dave Brailsford came across, you know, a little bit more plausible, but I didn't feel that he was convincing. And I don't feel that this whole story has left a stain on Team Sky that I don't see disappearing anytime soon.
Yeah, a couple of weeks, maybe even longer at this point, you were saying that the future for Team Sky should not involve Dave Brailsford.
Yeah, I wrote that about 2 months ago. See, for me, I appreciate the point that this has been a sensational week. But the sensational week for me was in September when Fancy Bears League showed that Bradley Wiggins had three TUEs for Triumph Sinalone before his three biggest races in 2011, 2012 and 2013. To me, that was the moment, because you just couldn't read the evidence of those three TUEs and not connect them to performance enhancement in the Tour de France. It just defied belief that Bradley Wiggins would have needed such strong therapy, you know, such a strong corticosteroid in a pretty significant dosage, 40 mg, so soon to his biggest races of 2011, 2012 and 2013. Now, 2011, 2012 particularly, because Team Sky had come into the sport on a very big budget with a huge ambition, driven by Dave Brailsford, who was a kind of a serial winner from his days in track cycling. And they performed terribly in 2010. And I think the pressure came on. And my view is that they went with Bradley Wiggins and Bradley Wiggins' Dr. Richard Freeman with these TUEs because my view is that they felt this huge pressure to win the Tour de France. And they did things that, in my view, they should not have done. And it's a really big monumental thing, because Wiggins went on to become the first British guy to win the Tour de France, and it's now with an asterisk, and the asterisk says received significant corticosteroid 4 days before the start of the race that he may or may not have been entitled to. And everybody says Team Sky didn't do anything illegal. You know, it might have been legal doping, but it was legal. They didn't cross that line into breaking the rules. You know, as in, their application for a TUE was passed by Mario Zarzoli. Now, Team Sky keeps saying, and people keep saying, it was passed by WADA. I don't think the system is quite that good. Mario Zarzoli, the kind of medical guy at the UCI, was making the decisions pretty much off his own bat. They didn't have a three-man panel, you know, in 2011, 2012. Zarzoli was making the decision. And, you know, Team Sky say, we had an external guy to say Bradley Wiggins needed this. Yes, they had. Does that mean that we have to, you know, totally accept that it was a legitimate application? It doesn't. We have to look at the evidence. How sick was Bradley Wiggins? He was getting a drug that you would have to be a pretty sick person to be using. There's no evidence in 2012 that he was sick at all.
David, how are you doing? Joe here. We're obviously talking about an immoral use of TUE. So taking your point about September and the Wiggins Fancy Bear situation, just one other point on what we've had this week, because you tweeted after watching Brailsford and Sutton at the select committee that you feel were being subjected to, quote, a massive cover-up. I'm wondering, do you believe it was Flumicil in the jiffy bag?
I think it's questionable. You know, because if it was Flumicil, there's a really obvious kind of next question.
Yeah.
Which is, why didn't they reveal that immediately?
Yeah, or lie twice to Matt Lawton.
Yes, you know, and the idea, I mean, Matt is, who's done fantastic work on this story, no question. This has been Matt Lawson's baby from beginning to end, and all credit to him for what he's done. Matt Lawton lets his kind of intermediary know that he knows about this medical package. So Dave Brailsford, and the intermediary is setting up the contact with Dave Brailsford. So the intermediary is obviously going to say to Dave Brailsford, he's talking about a medical package that was brought over by Simon Cope on 12th of June 2011, you know, the afternoon of the last stage of the Dauphiné. Now, by the time Simon Cope arrives, or, you know, I mean, Bradley Wiggins is already riding the last stage or finished the last stage. So there's no suggestion that this medical package had anything to do with his performance in that Dauphiné, which he won. But Simon Cope comes. So Matt Lawton knows about this. The intermediary tells Brailsford he knows about it. Dave Brailsford says, well, I've got to talk to him. But the first thing Dave Brailsford would have done, you would have imagined, was call up Richard Freeman. If Dave Brailsford didn't already know what was in the medical package, he calls up Richard Freeman and he says, Doc, can you remember that 2011 Dauphiné? Simon Cope came over with medical package that you had asked him to bring over, or you had asked to be brought over. What was in it?
Yeah.
That takes 5 minutes.
So that suggests that Brailsford here has a, let's say, an interesting relationship with the truth. When is the first time you've been embedded with this team? You've known Brailsford a long time. When is the first time you thought to yourself, Dave Brailsford has an interesting relationship with the truth?
I wouldn't put it so sensitively, really.
Okay. When did you think this guy lies?
What I would say is, when I heard about the Fancy Bears leaks, that was the moment where I thought, you know, this isn't as he sold it. This isn't as he is selling it. They did something there with those three. And I then had to discover, well, who knew about the TUEs? Did Dave Brailsford even know about them? Was Bradley Wiggins working with Richard Freeman on a kind of a private basis, and the TUEs got through without Dave Brailsford even knowing about them? Now, that was implausible, because he's the boss of the team. He has to know about TUEs. But I started to make inquiries then, because I felt something was seriously wrong. And the advantages of being inside the team for the 13 weeks I spent inside the team in 2013 was I made lots of contacts in the team. And what I found out was that there were four people involved in this kind of TUE in terms of the application for it, the administration of it, and knowing about it. The four people were Bradley Wiggins, Shane Sutton, Dave Brailsford, and Dr. Richard Freeman. Now, obviously, the outside consultant, Simon Hargreaves, would have known about it as well, but he wasn't involved. You know, he was there as the outside consultant to say, yes, this is appropriate. So as soon as I kind of nailed that down, I felt Dave Brailsford had been utterly, centrally involved in this. And that's the moment where you think, he's not who he says he is. And when you then made further inquiries and you realised that Rod Ellingworth, key guy in the team, logistics, planning, coach, you know, a guy who's been central from day one, knew nothing about the TUEs. And I know that as a fact. I know that for the first two TUEs, Tim Kerrison didn't know. Tim Kerrison is the coach. When you get people as high up in the organisation who are being kind of kept out of the loop, you know that the people who are in the loop feel that what they're doing may not be something that everybody would agree with. I then discovered that there were, again, because I knew people in the team, there were three doctors operating at the time, outside of Richard Freeman. At the time of these three TUEs, Phil O'Reilly, Richard Usher, Alan Farrell were all working as doctors within Team Sky. And the TUEs were applied for and approved before they knew. In other words, they weren't involved in the consultation. Now, you would have heard Dave Brailsford say the Select Committee on Monday, you would have heard him say that, you know, these decisions are not made by one man, as in one doc. You know, we consult and blah, blah, blah. Well, that isn't actually what happened with the medical team. And Dr. Richard Freeman, you know, had a, I would say, a strained relationship with some of the doctors in that team. They didn't think, you know, they didn't think that these TUEs were right. And so, for me, you know, Richard Freeman is not really the issue here. The issue is Dave Brailsford, because he's the man with ultimate responsibility. I mean, people were saying at different times, well, this must put Dr. Freeman's place in the team in kind of jeopardy. And I say, how could it? If the boss man who was approving of all of this and totally supportive is not sanctioned. And from my point of view, if Team Sky were serious about trying to rebuild their credibility, because I feel they've lost that, they show the public and they show the cycling community that they take the transgressions that have happened, and I believe there are transgressions here, whether they're moral, ethical or legal, there are transgressions, that they take them really seriously. Well, the way to do that is to say to Dave, sorry, Dave, we've got to move ahead without you. And I believe that's what should happen, but I don't think it is going to happen, because my information from within the team is that the Sky News, who basically are bankrolling the team, have said that there won't be a future if Dave Brailsford is not boss.
Yeah, so maybe there's no team then. Maybe that ultimately is where this goes. Just just, can we go back to Geert Leinders and his involvement with the team back at the end of 2010, 2011? It's around that period, I think. Am I right about saying that's the kind of time that he was involved?
Yeah, it was 2011 going into 2012.
Yeah, so Leinders is obviously somebody who's come from Rabobank, which some people say was an even more sophisticated doping system than US Postal. And he's involved with the team and ultimately ends up getting banned for life from cycling for doping offences. Is that not really the point that the credibility of the team comes into question?
You could argue that Dave Brailsford didn't do due diligence, because at the time, you know, the appointment of Geert Leinders was wrong, because Geert Leinders had been involved in Rabobank. Now, the stuff about Rabobank came out later. We can all be incredibly wise. If you'd said to me at that time, David, what do you think Rabobank were doing? Now, at the time of the appointment, 2011, I would have thought, yeah, probably dodgy. Do you know about Leinders? No, I didn't know about Leinders. Didn't even know that Geert Leinders worked with the team. Now, I'm not the one hiring him, and I'm not the one who should be doing due diligence. Dave Brailsford clearly didn't do enough due diligence. But he didn't do the due diligence with Jonathan Tiernan Locke, the rider who came to the team with a bloody positive test hanging over him.
Yeah.
Now, this was a rider. Now, unlike Geert Leinders, nothing was ever written about Geert Leinders. It did subsequently come out. But Jonathan Tiernan Locke, when he was winning his biggest races, there were articles in the Keep saying that the riders in the race didn't believe his performances were authentic. It was like there, staring out. Now, Dave Brailsford paid a very significant amount of money for Jonathan Tiernan Locke. He never performed anywhere near a kind of the level of his contract, and eventually, you know, he tested positive.
Yeah,
very embarrassing.
I get that. Again, though, you know, it's a big team. He's not that important a member of the team, really, when you compare the value of Tiernan Locke to the team with, say, a Wiggins or a Froome or any of the guys at that level. But also, now in retrospect, having Geert Leinders, who is a doctor who knows his way around doping, involved with the team just before they become one of the most dominant teams in cycling history, that raises massive questions about everything that comes afterwards, right?
Yeah, no, I think you just barking up the wrong tree with Leinders. I mean, Leinders, yes, he had a reputation, and you could say that Brailsford didn't do his due diligence, and that's perfectly valid
but
criticism.
Is the assumption then that Leinders is clean when he goes to Sky, and that we have to take that at face value?
What I've done is investigated, you know, Leinders, and I was never around the team when he was there, but every single person I spoke to said Geert Leinders was totally clean. A journalist
do you believe that? Do you believe that? Because you've been told things which probably aren't true.
Of course, I totally believe that.
But why? Do you believe that point?
Why? Because there's absolutely no evidence. And I know that, just consider this. Journalist turns up at Gert Leinder's door, and they get talking. And Gert Leinder says, Gert Leinder's now doing, I think he's doing an MA at some university in Belgium, I think. And Gert Leinder said, yeah, I mean, I doped. I was involved in doping at Rabobank, no question. But he said, when I went to Sky, they said they were a clean team. And they said they didn't, they, you know, that their ethics, blah, blah, blah. And he said, I was 100% clean with them. And if you've noticed that all this stuff was happening, I mean, about the TUEs and English newspapers, the Times especially, was jumping to the conclusion. Gert Leinder's was, you know, the ghost of Gert Leinder's haunts Team Sky. And in fairness to the people involved in Team Sky, every one of them came out and said, that's 100% wrong. We may be guilty of everything else, but you're wronging Leinder's. He was actually a good guy in our team.
I know.
As a when a guy called Rigoberto Urán was given a TUE at that 2011 Dauphiné in June 2011, Sky broke one of their own protocols, which is they had agreed they wouldn't give a rider a TUE in competition. They did. Richard Freeman was involved in the dispensation of that TUE. Gert Leinder's was the only doctor who complained about that, who said, we have a rule.
But the thing about that is that... So can you see why we're sceptical about how now... Let me finish this point, just so you can see how people are sceptical about this, where here's a team that says, oh, we're not going to do any TUEs, but it turns out Brailsford knows. And the only way we get to find this out is because of a leak from a Russian hacker. Here is a doctor who has a proven doping past, involved with a team who are not in existence, come into existence, don't perform really well, and then suddenly get really good. It's like, it's the hallmarks of a story that, for casual sports fans, for cycling fans, do you see that point of view?
Yeah, I do, you know, but I'm not a casual sports fan, you know. I actually go in there and ask questions. I tell you, what Richard Freeman did in the team, in my view, was wrong. I know Richard Freeman well.
But David, sorry to interrupt. Asking questions here probably isn't enough. Like, we now have to reassess everything you were told. And like, okay, so the Leinder's thing, I think we'll remain sceptical and we'll have to differ in that. And people telling you he didn't behave in a certain way.
Can you give me, you know, apart from... Gert Leinder's, you know, notorious past with Rabobank, which we all agree on, that's not in dispute. Can you give me one scintilla of evidence that Gert Leinder's was up to no good in Team Sky?
I couldn't give you one scintilla of evidence that Bradley Wiggins was up to no good until the Fancy Bears hacked it. And so this is an unknown unknown here, as opposed to something that actually... You know, we should be suspicious of Gert Leinder's and the improvements of the Team Sky riders in the aftermath of his...
Do you not see the irony of this story? You know, it's like, to me, it's kind of blindingly obvious. This was a British attempt, in my view, a British cycling attempt. Richard Freeman was a British cycling doctor. He'd worked for Bolton Wanderers Football Club before, you know, going to British cycling. He was the guy working with Wiggins at all times. Everybody knew that. The only races Richard Freeman did were the races Bradley Wiggins rode. And even when people thought that Richard Freeman had left the team, for example, when Bradley Wiggins was doing Paris-Roubaix in 2015, people didn't see Richard Freeman around for a long time before then. And suddenly he turns up because Brad is riding Paris-Roubaix. Now, The irony is so unbelievable here. Yes, they got Gert Leinder's. It was a really bad decision. Gert Leinder's had a notorious past. But the guy who was key to all of Bradley Wiggins' TUEs was the British cycling doctor Richard Freeman. And my information from Steve Peters, and you can say he was lying to you, but it wasn't a lie that really did Sky much good, because he was telling me that Sky had broken their own protocols in getting a TUE for Rigoberto Urán in 2011. But he goes on then to tell me that Gert Leinder's was the guy who complained.
Okay. Well, maybe let's just park Leinder's for a moment there. Either way, something really, really dodgy is happening here. You've called it a massive cover-up. So the question marks now surely have to extend very much onto Chris Froome as well.
Yeah. I mean, people will extend those questions. Chris Froome, there's no question about that. Chris Froome knows that. And, you know, who knows what's going to come out, you can say. My own belief is that I've always believed Froome is clean. And, you know, is your confidence shaken a bit? On balance, I'd say I still believe, but I tell you, the need for questions is greater than ever. Because what we now realise is that Dave Brailsford was basically, you know, telling us lies of admission. I mean, I had one conversation with Dave Brailsford since this whole thing has come up. And basically, I said to him, do you realise that when you were inviting me into the team, that if you had said, well, I've got to tell you about Bradley's TUEs in 2011 and 2012, I said I wouldn't have gone near your team. Because I would have said, that's completely wrong what you did. If you told me the honest situation, I said, no journalist would have accepted that and thought that was okay, because that wasn't okay. You've won the Tour de France with a guy who got a seriously performance-enhancing corticosteroid 4 days before the race started when nobody remembers him being sick. And all I heard on the other end of the line was silence.
It's very late in the day for that, though, right? Like, at that point, this is now maybe 2016, sometime between September and December 2016.
Well, this was like 2 days. I didn't know about Bradley Wiggins' TUEs. How was I meant to know about them?
Well, I guess you went to bat for Team Sky.
No, I didn't go to bat for Team Sky.
Well, sorry.
I was a journalist. I mean, that's...
Why I Believe in Chris Froome was the headline on your piece in the Sunday Times.
Yep.
He's their leader of Team Sky, and also you wrote the book Inside Team Sky, which in many ways holds them up as a paradigm of sporting excellence. But it does.
Dave Brailsford hated the book.
But that's irrelevant, though. I mean, the book. You were asked on Twitter. Someone asked you if you felt that you were used to give them legitimacy, and you said there are times when I do think that. And like on the basis of 13 weeks with them, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but I was trying to check if you'd had a similar experience with other teams to compare them to, like a similar frame of reference to compare their marginal gains with other teams. I didn't see any other similar embedding. On the basis of that period, your book did come out very strongly in favour of these guys are doing things differently, they're doing it clean. It did celebrate the marginal gains. Do you regret coming out as strongly, or certainly as, I was going to use the word prematurely, but as quickly as you did? Like, surely the situation at the end of 2013, from your point of view, should have been, I haven't seen anything yet, but there are still a ton of question marks over these guys. Because you're working off their word, in effect, in a lot of situations.
Well, I wouldn't have said a ton of question marks. And I don't think I came out prematurely. I spent 13 weeks in the team. I wrote the piece about Chris Froome, I Believe in Him. But I still believe in him. So it's not like I look at the Bradley Wiggins TUEs and I look at the medical package brought over for Bradley Wiggins and I say, well, that proves that Chris Froome is doping. It doesn't.
What about David Brailsford effectively, it seems, trying to suppress one of the biggest stories in British cycling history by offering the journalist who's breaking it another story, which is, to all intents and purposes, a bribe? He's the guy who's in charge of this team, and he's like, here, I've got something better for you. What would it take for you not to write this story?
Remind me of the journalist who wrote 2 months ago that Brailsford needs to resign.
Sure, but I don't know if you can disassociate Froome from that setup.
He's their star writer.
If I heard in the morning that Chris Froome had decided to leave Team Sky, I'd be pleased. I think that would be a good decision for him to make. But I appreciate there are contractual concerns and it might not be so easy. But I do know that of all the writers out there who've criticised Team Sky over this, if you were to list the top five, Chris Froome is in the top five. Now, given that he's criticising the people who are paying him a ton of money to run, to race, you know, that's pretty significant when Sky's team leader is one of its biggest critics on the Bradley Wiggins TUEs. That's a significant thing. No matter, you don't see professional sportsmen criticising their sponsors.
I guess he's criticising a writer who's now retired from the sport. Just to go back.
No. He criticised the team. He didn't criticise the writer.
Okay.
He criticised the team.
Okay. And I guess, but Dave, that's exactly what he has to do.
That's not enough. As Jer says, he has to do that. Like, that, if we're looking at how somebody would go about cheating, then of course Chris Froome would do that.
Yeah, well, and if he didn't do that, people would say he was silent.
Yeah, yeah, it's fair. It's fair. Yeah. He's in a tricky situation. But just to go back to the whole point of it being now that these questions are being asked of Brailsford in the last couple of months, the issue of the 2012 tour came up on the show before in one of the paper reviews. Why didn't you cover the 2012 tour?
Why didn't I cover it? Because I hadn't covered the Tour de France since 2004.
But Bradley Wiggins was about to win it, and he's British, and you work for the biggest British Sunday newspaper as their chief sports writer.
Because I wasn't asked by my boss to cover it, and I didn't cover it because I hadn't been on the race for 8 years. And I just had no interest in covering it, as I had no interest in covering... Bradley Wiggins was one of the favourites in 2011.
But it wasn't because you had doubts. So you had no doubts about Bradley Wiggins in 2012. That wasn't the reason.
It wasn't that I had doubts about Bradley Wiggins. I was just fed up of covering the sport. I didn't cover Armstrong's tour in 2005, his last one. I didn't cover 2006. I didn't cover 2007. Didn't cover 2008. I didn't do
but anything. there was no Brit. Like, it's kind of like not covering the Formula One if Lewis Hamilton's going to win it.
This is the biggest
sports event in the world in that month, and you're their chief sports writer.
And you could just as easily argue that 2010 was actually the biggest kind of Team Sky Tour de France because it was their first. I had no interest. You could argue that Bradley Wiggins had won the Dauphiné in 2011. He was going in as one of the big favourites. That was the one to cover. I wasn't interested. The 2012 win, in my eyes, was just no different to those. I hadn't covered the race for 8 years. And I wasn't covering it again.
And do you regret that now, as a matter of interest? And do you regret maybe not asking these questions of Brailsford earlier, given now that it looks like he is willing to do absolutely whatever it takes to win, and in a sport that has serious question marks over its pedigree?
Well, I asked lots of questions. I have plenty of reasons for regrets in my life. The Team Sky one isn't actually that high up there.
So you've no regrets over the book? Or even...
Oh, of course, I have plenty of regrets, but it's not something I'm lying awake at night. I mean, I look at the work I've done in the Sunday Times, and they're the people that I've got a responsibility to. And I look at the whole my coverage of the Sky story. I'm relatively happy with it. There are loads of things I would do differently if I got the chance to do it again, but that's always the case. You know, you're never happy with what you write. You're never happy with what you do. But I know that the people who read the Sunday Times Sunday after Sunday, because you end up meeting lots of people who read your columns at different times, and I've had a sense that they understand where I'm coming from. I look at social media and people forming their views on what other people say about you, and come on, you can't lose your life about that stuff.
No, sure. I mean, it's a difficult situation that anybody finds himself in when you're covering the story. Would you write Chris Froome's book again? Is that it's just a difficult situation where you end up becoming a contractor for somebody you're covering.
Yeah, I would. I mean, my job is a writer. You know, I've got you know, plenty of reasons for having to earn a living, you know. And I admire Chris Froome. I believe in him. Maybe it'll turn out that he was cheating everybody too. But again, if that happens, I was definitely wrong.
Are you pissed off definitely with Team Sky wrong. And David Brailsford now, given everything that's come out over the last 3 months?
Yeah, I no question about that. Because what has turned out here, and I think I'm not the only person to see this. I think this is something that David Brailsford's biggest admirers would now be thinking, Dave, you weren't the man that we thought you were. You gave us an impression of being somebody who, you know, wouldn't do the kind of things we now know you were doing, i.e. with Bradley Wiggins' TUEs. And as brilliant as Matt Lawton's story was about the medical package, it's like it's part of the medical package. It's part of that greater Wiggins story. Because the medical package was for Wiggins. It was Richard Freeman ordering it. You know, Dr. Freeman and Bradley Wiggins, in my view, were pushing the boundaries well beyond what was acceptable. And Dave Brailsford presided over that. He knew about that. He supported that. And that's why he's no longer the man he was perceived to be 6 months ago.
David, another question on that. Obviously, he invited Paul Kimmage in initially and then got rid of him. Did that not set off alarm bells that Brailsford might not be the man that he was pretending to be? For you going in there?
Yeah, I mean, Paul was in the team for a few days and it didn't work out. And my understanding, you know, from, you know, at that time was that, you know, it just didn't work as a relationship. And
but if Brailsford, if Brailsford was really serious about this, then surely a guy in there who even was upsetting a little people a little bit might be the exactly the guy, if he was very genuine about this, to have in there.
Yeah, Dave Brailsford's view at the time when he was proposing to me, he said, you know, he was taking responsibility for why it didn't work with Paul, in the sense that he said, you know, we invited Paul to join us at the Tour de France. Crazy. When we're all stressed and none of the guys know him, he said, if you're going to come, you've got to come to the training camp in January, which I did. So by the time the Tour de France came around, I was a very familiar face and I knew people. And it was a very different situation. And I could see that. I mean, somebody says to you...
Should they have re-invited him if it didn't work at the tour, then come back again the following year?
Perhaps, you know.
Okay,
I mean,
fair enough. Yeah, okay. There was one other thing, and I just wanted to ask you about this, because I've heard you speak brilliantly before about how in 1999, post-Festina, you looked at the speeds Lance was doing and you thought, this doesn't make sense. This ain't right. And I've seen other quotes, you know, when Vinokourov and Rasmussen were put out of the tour. You were looking at Contador's speeds and you thought, do you know what? I'm not so sure about this either. And yet Froome has done remarkable speeds, comparable with Lance. And it's not just down to technology. We've talked to enough people to know it's not just down to better bikes. I've never understood fully why you haven't looked at Froome's speeds and some of his performances and been... curious, if not unconvinced. You've never explained that well enough for me. I don't understand why you've looked at Froome's performances.
Well, I mean, the thing about Lance in 1999 was that Jean-Marie Leblanc had said there will be much less drugs in the 1992 than there was in 1998 and previous years, and you will see it in slower time, slower overall time. And 1999 turned out to be the fastest tour in history at that time. So I use that as a kind of a reason for wondering. But then, within no time, we had a positive test for cortisone for Lance, triamcinolone, you know, same corticosteroid that Bradley Wiggins was using for his three big races in 2011, 2012, and 2013. So that was like an overwhelming reason for doubting Lance. He tested positive, and they covered it up. So... yes, I did mention, I don't remember mentioning anything about Contador speeds. I certainly remember looking at Rasmussen and thinking he was like the kind of speeds he could do in the mountains looked like seriously impressive if you were being positive, or seriously suspicious if you weren't being. The reason I don't, and you're right, I mean, I did mention it in 99 for sure, but I also would have mentioned Christophe Basson 50 times more, because that was far more significant to me. Christophe Basson, I'm not a good guy to start talking science,
but
I don't understand it.
I was curious why there are people raising questions about Froome's performance that you didn't go and try and speak to somebody who did understand the science more, speak to a Ross Tucker, these kind of people who are asking questions. Put the burden of proof on the athlete.
I spoke to tons of people, you know. They say, you know, Froome was faster on Vaughan 2 than Armstrong was. And I say, what was the wind like that day? I don't know. I mean, I put...
But in 2013, when Froome went up stage 8 of the Bonascur AX3 De Man, he did it in 23 minutes, 14 seconds into a headwind. And that beat Lance's time of 03 and 05. It didn't beat his time of 01, but he did that into a headwind. Like, I don't know if that's judge and jury, he's done. But there should be huge questions, though.
And in 2003 and 2005, how many climbs had Lance gone over before that climb?
I appreciate that point. But given the trajectory of Froome's career... of Froome's career, that he was capable of this, David... I just don't know I don't know how anyone listening could sign off on Froome.
Yeah, well, you know, I could have sat on the fence, you know, and then I would never have been wrong,
There's nothing wrong with saying I'm not sure.
Yeah, but if I believed in the guy, I'd be telling a lie.
But that's my point. I don't know how you can believe in him fully in light of those performances and his trajectory. I think it's okay to say, I'm not sure, it's too early to say. Like, I think that's fine to say in 2013, 14, 15.
Yeah, well, you know, I stated that I believed in the guy. And you know, judging from wherever you're judging from, whatever you've done investigative-wise, I don't know. But, you know...
I'm not saying he's dirty, I'm saying...
I did the best I could, and I had a great conversation with Frankie Andreo. Frankie said, just sit on the fence, you'll never be wrong. And I said, Frankie, can't do that, man. I can't do it. And probably Frankie was right. If I'd sat on the fence, I'm fine. Everything is good. Dave never said that he believed in Froome, so therefore all those people who don't believe in him feel comfortable with my position.
Well, I guess,
but
the other thing
I'm
is...
I'm not interested in popularity.
You have a bias. You've got a confirmation bias then every time you look for people who are coming at you, because ultimately you end up defending the position as you are now, and it becomes a position you become associated with, as opposed to the position being my position is to ask questions here, and I'm going to rigorously ask those continuously over a period of time until perhaps evidence emerges, as it has done in Wigan's case now. Like, you wondered where the whistleblowers were, where the Christophe Bassons were for Chris Froome. Well, they're starting to emerge now for Bradley Wiggins, and who knows what the future holds.
Yeah, but we don't need whistleblowers for Bradley Wiggins now, because the TUEs are there staring us in the face.
But we didn't have them 4 months ago, is my point. Like, we didn't have them.
We've never had whistleblowers, but we've just had the Fancy Bears leaks. You know, somebody got into the World Anti-Doping Agency files and told us stuff we didn't know, that nobody knew, that Chris Froome didn't know, that Tim Kerrison didn't know, that Rod Ellingworth didn't know, and that's what makes this stink to the high heavens. Of course it does. And I do say, what this has done, as you know, this realization that Bradley Wiggins was being given huge corticosteroid dosage just before the start of the 2012 Tour de France, it makes you question things. Of course it does. And you know, if I'm looking to the future, am I looking, you know, even more skeptically at Chris Froome now, or asking more questions? Of course I am.
The one last point on that is that after the Lance story broke, after the USADA reason report came out, you kind of had this unbelievable power in cycling to confer a freedom on Chris Froome, essentially, to say, I believe in this guy, and you gifted him all of the heft of your reputation. And
well, it's your words that I had this unbelievable power.
But you did, Like, I mean, well, you know, they made a movie about you.
They didn't make a movie. They made a movie in which I was involved. You know, but again, you know, does that change the fact that I'm a journalist who's out there, and I've got my, I don't see myself as having that power. I don't really want that power. I'm just a journalist trying to do his job as best he can. And the one thing I'm not noted for is sitting on the fence. And
yeah, Deb, can I just pick you up on that?
I won't do that.
Can I pick you up on that point? Look, you've done more in journalism than I'm ever going to do, so I don't feel great about holding you to account like this in some way. I'm really trying to get inside your head. You say there, I couldn't sit in the fence. Okay, I had to make a call one way or another. You didn't.
No. That's not what I said.
Okay, you couldn't sit in the fence, but that implies you had to say, well, I believe in him or I don't.
No. What I said was, if I believed the guy was clean, I wasn't going to pretend that I didn't think he was clean and sit on the fence. Mm. That's what I'm saying.
And you don't think now, in hindsight, it was premature to say, I believe he's clean? You think you had enough evidence?
I've already answered the question by saying, if I believed at that time that he was clean, I wasn't going to say, you know, let me sit on the fence on this. Because, you know, that's just, that to me, that's kind of playing clever and making sure that you won't be wrong no matter what happens. And that just didn't appeal to me. I mean, maybe you'll be sitting in 5 years' time and say, by God, Welsh got it spectacularly wrong about Froome, perhaps. But I'll tell you, I got it honestly wrong, because I honestly believe the guy is clean.
And do you feel you got it wrong about Team Sky and Brailsford?
I don't think... I mean, the thing about Dave Brailsford, I did think he was a fantastic manager, or a creator, a founder of this team. And I do believe he's a hugely talented man. And, I mean, I heard Matt Lawton on your program the other evening say pretty much the same thing. Matt said he put him up there with Alex Ferguson and Jose Mourinho before all this came out. And I would have had Brailsford down as one of the great managers. And I mean, I'm basing that on seeing the kind of environment he created in terms of the relationships within the team, the quality of the people there. And I mean, people might laugh at this. I think, you know, if you exclude the Wiggins, Freeman, Sutton, Brailsford, you know, shenanigans in 2011, 2012, 2013. I think there's a lot about Team Sky that's actually admirable. And on the whole doping question, there's a lot of people in Team Sky who really do believe in in clean cycling. And that's not me kind of speaking up on their behalf. Remember, I'm the guy who says basically Brailsford should resign or be kicked out. But there are good people in that team, and they have achieved some great things.
Just not the ones in charge, though. Just not Bradley Wiggins and David Brailsford. So if a bunch of people didn't know that there were TUEs being handled out, if there were a bunch of people were effectively being lied to, you know, it's hard to give any credence to the organization having any credibility
anymore.
There's
no question. Yeah, well, that's what I've said. The team has lost its credibility. There's no question about that.
And isn't that where doping is going now, presumably? Like, you look at Lance and it was almost caricature stuff. There's not going to be another Emma O'Reilly. They're not going to tell everybody in the team what's going on. It will be a select group. Like, you talk about Wigan, Sutton, Brailsford, Freeman. It's not going to be an Emma O'Reilly ever again.
No, I agree. And I agree with what you're saying. And I think there's also another division. You've got doping by people who don't have much resources. And you've got doping by people who have a lot of resources. And the people who have a lot of resources can dope in ways that may not be illegal. They can dope in ways that may not be detectable. The people who don't have resources are going to get caught, and they're going to get sanctioned, and they're going to be, you know, held up to ridicule. All of that. I mean, I'm in the US now, and I've been with Vitaly and Yulia Stepanov over the last few days, and Vitaly made the point that, you know, you're in Russia, and you've got to have some inoculations for your kid, and you have them, and you can complain about Russia, he said, but you can have them, and they're free. And you come to America and you get your inoculations, and as Vitaly said, he said, I need to know if this is going to cost anything before I pay for it, because I may not be able to afford it, and if I can't afford it, I'm not going to have it. And they agreed, and they told him that each jab would cost $20, and there was five jabs, $100. He gets the bill, and it's $360. And he rings the lady up and said, we agreed, and I asked you to tape the conversation. And she basically kind of denied it. Eventually, he just refused to pay. Now, his point is that this is kind of, you know, kind of corporate fraud, and it happens all the time. You know, your private healthcare in America, you get one ibuprofen, $7. You buy it in your local Walmart, 10 cents. And Vitaly says, he says, how can this be? And I say to him, what Fancy Bears showed us is that, you know, if you're doping in the West and you've got a lot of resources behind you, this is how you do it. And if you're doping in Russia, you've got some coach handing you anabolic steroids, EPO, and telling you to just take as much as you like, and we'll try and cover up for you. But they weren't able to, and that is the way I believe doping is going to go, and that's just a threat to sport now, that the people with resources can do it, may be able to do it with impunity.
Yeah.
And I think Team Sky is a good example of that.
Okay, great stuff, David. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
David Walsh, the chief sports writer of the Sunday Times, joining us this evening to talk to us about that ongoing scandal surrounding Team Sky. 53106 is the text number. We've gone way over time with that, but we felt that obviously it was worth giving the time to.
It's Lance Armstrong week here on OTB.
Are you a complete rookie?
OTB Gold.
Listen to our interviews with the people closest to his story on the OTB Podcast Network.
Are you crazy?